this is why, for example, on the Meta announcement of these kind of bots that they're building, humanized bots, I'm not convinced that's going to work, because I think for a long time, we're going to know it's not really human quite quickly, and we're actually, our trust is going to go down.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
Have you ever wondered why, in a world where we can speak three times faster than we type, we're still relying on outdated buttons and touchscreens? Today, we're diving deep into the revolutionary world of voice technology with none other than Tobias Dengel, the author of The Sound of the Future, The Coming Age of Voice Technology, on shelves now. As the president of WillowTree, a digital experience developer recently acquired for $1.3 billion, he has shaped digital strategies for global giants like T-Mobile, HBO, and MasterCard. We're about to uncover the potential of voice tech way past early attempts like Siri and Alexa, understand its transformative power across industries, and discover the profound shifts awaiting the financial sector and beyond. Plus, we'll touch on the key challenges, privacy concerns, and the tantalizing future of this groundbreaking technology. Stay tuned for an enlightening conversation starting right now. Tobias, welcome to Future Proof.
Jeremy, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you. I want to ask you what we kind of start everybody off with, which is, you know, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you define yourself?
Yeah, so I define myself as trying to help my team here do awesome things, right? I think when you run a company, manage a company, ultimately your job is to make the folks who are on the front line doing the work every day as effective as possible. So it's finding the best people to do that work and then making sure they've got all the tools and the freedom, especially the autonomy, to do awesome things for themselves and for our clients. So that's how to try to spend my days.
And, you know, I think that what you and I have in common is writing something and being able to put together ideas that can help people, the broader world, at the same time as, you know, you're managing a company, managing a team, leading, which, I mean, there are some people who are just gluttons for punishment and just try to do a ton. So maybe we're both in that, you know, boat. What inspired you to write a book on voice technology, and why do you believe now is the right time for such a topic?
Yeah, so, you know, we help our clients with all kinds of things, but what we get asked all the time is, what's the next big tech trend, right? We had the internet, then we had mobile, and since then, there hasn't been anything that has been nearly as big of a sea change as those two things. And there have been a lot of false starts, right? If you were at CES in 2013, you were being told that half the houses in the United States households would have 3D TV by now. No one has a 3D TV. Same with kind of Google Glass, same with autonomous vehicles. And so we're always looking at these new technologies and trying to figure out what human need does it really solve. And the problem with those three examples is they were undeniably exciting when you saw them the first time, but they really didn't solve anything day to day for us as people the way the internet has or the way mobile has. But we started getting super interested in voice in about 2015, 2016, because up until ChatGPT, it was the fastest adoption of a new technology in history. And we're like, why are people into this? Why do people want to use Siri? Why do they want to get an Alexa? And when you really break it down, it's because we can speak three times as fast as we can type. So it completely changes the interface between us and machines over time. And we felt like that wasn't really appreciated. And the reason that Alexa and Siri are kind of still in the nice to have, but not mission critical category, is because we haven't implemented them correctly. We haven't optimized the implementation. And that's very common for any new technology, right? It takes a long time, 5 or 10 years sometimes, to figure it out. And we're particularly excited right now because of the innovations around Gen AI and how ChatGPT has changed the world. But it's the convergence of Gen AI and conversational AI and voice tech that's going to unleash this whole next string of innovation that I think is, you know, going to be bigger than mobile was in many ways and equal to the internet.
Well, and I think it's actually fortuitous when we're talking because, you know, if you just look at some recent announcements, you know, you have OpenAI, ChatGPT announcements, you know, about voice support. So I think that that's like a little bit more of voice going mainstream, if you will. I think also the announcements about Meta's celebrity chatbots, you know, that's representing another application of voice technology and AI. And it seems to me that every company, what they're trying to do is figure out how can they, you know, just to take your words and, you know, throw them back at you, find different ways to do interesting things that are interesting and going to be solving some type of human need and doing something that's going to be additive to the global conversation as opposed to just something that is just like of the moment that doesn't really last, you know? So I'm just wondering, like, when you think about those two particular recent applications, do you think both of those are kind of heading in the right track, wrong track? What would you say?
Yeah, they're both quite different. It's funny when, you know, it takes a long time to write a book. And having gotten through it, I will tell you, I have an extraordinary amount of respect for anyone who publishes a book now that I've gone through it myself. But in November of last year, when ChatGPT 3.5 came out, and that was all the rage in the press, for a second, we were thinking, holy crap, did we miss the boat here? Like, our whole thesis was around conversational AI, and now this Gen AI thing is the hot thing. But over the last 6 to 9 months, it's become apparent that for Gen AI to really reach its potential, it's got to get married with conversational AI. And the announcements from our recording last week around ChatGPT really reinforce that. And I think the way to think about it is the traditional voice interfaces, Siri, Alexa, that people talk about, they do things, right? They're here to do simple things, listen to music, blah, 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 find a sports score, find the weather. Whereas ChatGPT it creates things, it makes things. Those two use cases have to get married, right? Because ChatGPT becomes so much more powerful when it can also change your address instead of having to call American Express to do that. And that is being unleashed right now. I am less convinced on the Meta announcements. I think entertainment is a super important part, and we highlight that in the book, of any new technology. You know, when the PC came about, or the internet came about, or mobile, gaming was an important component, but it can never be of a true technology shift. It can never be the only driver or the main driver. And I think that, you know, one of our theses in the book is that what's held voice back is that we try to make it too human-like, and we try to make these voice assistants. And a lot of what Meta is doing is going in that direction. It's not exclusively in that direction, but a lot of it. So I'll be interested to see if that really works out at scale, or if that becomes more of a sidelight entertainment gaming kind of application. And the reason that these voice assistants aren't necessarily, in our opinion, the way that this is all going to pan out is because we speak so much faster than we can type, but we can also read much faster than we can listen. And so we're huge believers in this multimodal expression of voice, where we speak to our devices, but then we get information back, right? And so I'll just give you a quick example. If you're going to ask Alexa or Siri to order movie tickets tonight, you want to say it because it's so fast, but you don't want to listen to Alexa list 4 movies with 3 show times each, right? That's a super long process. You want to say something, you want to see it on a screen, and then you say, all right, 4 tickets to Star Wars at 8 o'clock, and you're already authenticated, et cetera. So now you've taken a process, takes maybe 3-4 minutes in an app to buy movie tickets. Now you do it in 15 seconds. Anyone who's been around the internet or digital knows that when you take a process, it takes 3-4 minutes, and you do it in 15 seconds, the world changes. Everyone's going to go to that. And so those are the kind of applications we think are going to happen.
And you're right, because I think that even before we get to the idea of voice, with ChatGPT, when it had the ability to integrate with other apps, I remember, you know, oh, I can add Expedia to it. And I would try, and I would be like, well, this is a really interesting sense of like where the technology will go in the future, but it's certainly not there yet because it was actually taking more time. So you think about like the novelty of that. Once it wears off, you realize when it like says, here's all the things I'm going to do, and I'm connecting to these different databases, and you realize it actually took you more time versus less, you're never going to stick around for that process. But when you remove the friction, you know, then obviously that is something that is going to be incredibly impactful. And I think also, I would almost argue that with like a Siri and Alexa, the reason why those didn't take off to the, I mean, Siri certainly didn't take off to the extent that Alexa did. But I think that when something can only do five or six different things, and then you change your instructions a little bit and it breaks, you know, it's the same idea that you wouldn't want to have a friend like that, or an intern like that is maybe a better example. You don't want to have an intern where you change your instructions slightly on one day for a coffee run, and all of a sudden it's incredibly confused.
Jeremy, you're hitting on something super important. It's this concept of trust and how we trust people around us, but really in this case, devices. And it's so much based, you know, cognitive trust, long-term trust is all based on, does this person or does this machine do what it says it's going to do? And the problem with voice has been, one of the problems is the way humans express themselves is just so diverse. Google released this study a few years ago that there's about 2,500 ways that human beings set their alarm at night, just set their alarm using voice. And so that just gives you an idea of the complexity of the problem and why generative AI is so important, because generative AI now uses all this data, you know, and is now able to process that and figure out on its own what are the 2,500 ways people set their alarm, versus up until this point in time, we've tried to do that via logic trees and tried to like basically type in every single possible way someone might say this. And it turns out that's, you know, it's hard enough to do for setting an alarm. It's impossible to do for general purpose speech.
Yeah. So building on that, one of the things that is very interesting to me is that you have so many different potentially, innovative uses across a number of different industries, you know, some of which you cover in the book. And I'm wondering, where do you feel that some of the most fascinating short-term use cases are? Which industries do you think can get the most out of this type of technology in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, I think number one is going to be customer support. And it's already changing, but it's going to change very rapidly in a very positive way for most of us who have to deal with customer support. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, I tried to do something which should be super simple. I was on the road, so I tried to call into my pharmacy to get my meds delivered while I was on the road to a different branch. And that took like 25 minutes and living hell. And those things are all going to get completely automated, but, you know, with humans in the loop, right? Because I think the whole near-term process issue is that we've got the risk of hallucinations, which is going to continue for a long time. And so humans are going to stay in the loop, but these systems are going to get better very, very, very quickly. I think that's going to make, you know, when you look at frustrations in life right now, top five for almost every poll you look at is having to call into customer service to get something done. I think the second level, which is much more meaningful, is safety. There are so many applications that are going to significantly increase safety. And the way to think about that is one category of jobs, any type of work that is in the industry, they say hands-on, heads-up, right? It's where you have both your hands doing something and you're looking at something. So law enforcement is an obvious application, but a lot of manufacturing processes, warehousing, or even helping, you know, in retail, helping someone find something, it's so much more efficient if you're looking at things and you're using your hands than if you have to get interrupted, take a phone out and like type a bunch of stuff into the phone or swipe and slide. And that's gonna change really quickly. I think in the book, there's a couple different examples we use to really bring this home where big accidents happen because humans didn't know how to interface with machines. So one is the Deepwater Horizon accident in the Gulf of Mexico, where for days people knew things were going wrong. They couldn't figure out how to get the machine to do what they wanted. And researchers at Stanford have already developed voice-based applications that would break that cycle if something like that were ever to happen again. The second is the Boeing 737 MAX accidents, where the pilots lost control of the planes because they couldn't interface with the autopilot in a way that they knew. And if they had voice applications, they would be able to break that cycle. And that's not just theory. Both the United States Air Force and the Russian Air Force are already deploying voice-based technology in military cockpits. So it's kind of happening right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that some of those cases that I wouldn't necessarily think of, you know, that are present in the book, which are really interesting to me. I think another area that you talk about a little bit that I think is ripe for, you know, disruption in that regard is healthcare. You know, if you think about how many people are waiting so long, certainly there's certain things that have to happen, you know, like in person, right? But how many things can be facilitated remotely through like a conversational AI? You know, it seems like eventually more and more, not that we should automate the humans out of that work, but it just seems that there's certain things that humans are good at, and there are certain things that you don't necessarily need a human for, provided you can train an AI to do that thing. So that just seems to me one of those areas that probably you're going to see a lot of money go in to try to solve those problems over the next few years.
Yeah. And in healthcare, it's in every aspect of healthcare, everything from how we manage time in the hospital. There are, I think it was in 2020, Time Magazine's top innovations of the year. One of them was a voice-based tool that nurses are using to really issue all their commands, do everything. Because if you go into a nurse's station in a hospital, everyone's just sitting in front of screens, typing orders in, typing this. It's so inefficient, right? And so those are the things that are going to get changed. So things like when you visit your primary care physician right now, my experience is typically he or she is in front of a computer the whole time typing while you're talking, which again makes no logical sense because once the information is out there, once I've said it, now we have one of the most highest paid jobs in the world who's transcribing what I'm saying into a computer, right? That should be happening on its own. And so I think healthcare is a really big area. But as you say, a lot of the straightforward things, it's all pattern recognition, right? And so last summer, I had a tick bite. I had to call in to get my Lyme's disease, you know, and that was like, I had to set up the call. I had to be on the call. Thank God it was at least telemedicine, but it was probably an hour and a half out of my day. Whereas that is like classic pattern recognition. Whereas if I could send a picture of the bite and answer three questions, the system should be able to say, obviously, Lyme disease risk, put in an antibiotic prescription, we're done. And again, policy and insurance and those things are gonna slow this down. It's not the technology so much, but we're going to get there. And I think it's going to free up a lot of resources in our economy for more interesting work.
Are there any concerns? And then this is kind of like, I'm a believer in this type of technology, but I know that you've written a little bit about this. And I know that there are some more mainstream concerns about how, like, let's say an AI can trick a human into giving up some, you know, confidential information through some type of trick phone call. I've actually seen that people, you know, sell conversational AI as a salesperson who can basically keep people on the call and gather information for them and then summarize it so that like a human being can follow up, basically, again, without disclosure. So I can see some of the privacy and security related concerns there. Do you, like, how concerned should people be, and what are the attempts that people are making to mitigate against those types of concerns?
So I think the concerns fall into two categories. One is this concept that AI is going to run amok and, you know, attack the humans. I think, at least in the foreseeable future, that's a super, super low risk because we have so many controls and AI just isn't wired into the systems of record that they could actually do something like that. Like, AI, as smart as it is, it can't build a gun. It can't shoot a gun. I mean, it's just, That's very much science fiction, at least for now. But AI in nefarious hands is a massive danger. And we have a regime in Russia that has started a war that has some of the smartest scientists in the world at its disposal. And so I'm sure they're looking to use this technology in ways to disrupt the West and to disrupt the Ukraine. We also have regimes like Iran, et cetera. So that's just state sponsored. And then you've got all the, you know, criminal levels that are going to use it for bypassing passwords, et cetera, et cetera. So it is going to unleash another level of arms race where the good guys are using AI to defend and the bad guys are using AI to attack. And just like any just like, you know, security, cybersecurity has been for the last 30 years, it's going to be a never-ending arms race between people who penetrate and then new defenses are set up, et cetera. But as users, we have to be conscious that the game is changing and we have to be super, super careful because especially things like voice are very easy to spoof. And so the elderly are targets, others are targets. Public figures, you and I, anyone can spoof our voices right now. So our families need to know that that's a real danger. And so I think like anything, it's mainly going to be being careful and humans are going to have to be smart about how they understand the new risks.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I kind of think about it is that it's a little bit like with email and email marketing. There are good actors and there are bad actors. And certainly there are scammers that I don't know how much they make, but they make a living off of scamming people through email. But if you create economic incentives so that most people say that we're going to use this for good purposes versus ill, then we're going to have a better ecosystem, you know? So essentially it's like, where are the economic incentives? And hopefully there are going to be economic incentives to create voice solutions so that most people don't, you know, fall to become scammers and, you know, be like selling gray market stuff through like falsified ads. I actually read something today about Tom Hanks, you know, having to come out and say that he wasn't involved in the production of an ad for some dental product, you know, just because they were very convincing, apparently, in cloning his voice. So it's interesting, and you're right. I think there are going to be actors on both sides doing things that were, and you know, hopefully we're going to just have good technology to protect ourselves against it, but it seems like it will be a little bit muddy for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, we had our summer interns here this summer, and they were leaving, and I said, I'm so jealous of you. I wish I were in your shoes. You're about to be on one of the biggest technology waves there's ever been. It feels like 1996, 97, where everything is possible, and it will be. But one of the areas that real investment and real opportunity lies is this concept of security and reliability vis-a-vis these types of technologies. Hallucinations are obviously a big issue. I think we're finding that it's going to be really, really hard to eliminate hallucinations, but there's approaches where you use a second LLM to look at what the first LLM's output is. And then you can start getting pretty, pretty good at making sure that there are no hallucinations because the second LLM will quickly figure out, wait a second, that makes no sense based on what I know about the world. And I think that's the area, you know, when I talk to CEOs about what's going on, everyone's interested in Gen AI, right? That goes without saying. Not a lot of companies have actually launched anything. And the reason is because A, they're trying to figure out what's the user interface. So to me, that's conversational AI. It's like, that's how you're going to get Gen AI to actually do something. But two is, how do we make sure it's reliable and secure? And so I think that's going to be the area of innovation for the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, I'm really excited to follow it because I think that there are a lot of people have ideas about how this whole thing will play out, and we don't know entirely right now. And certainly there are people like you who've got a better handle on it. I think the one thing that I wanted to get a firm grasp from you on, because everybody has a very different perspective, is that are these AIs, you know, that we have conversations with eventually, like right now, I feel like they're kind of close to human, but we know that they're not human. We know we're not interacting with a human. Is there a point where we're going to be totally fine with not knowing whether or not we're talking to a human being or an AI, or will that always have a bit of a creep factor? And will there need to be disclosures before you're talking to an AI? Because it seems like that's something where I hear a lot of different opinions from people about where we're going to net out as a society.
Yeah, so it's the second part of this concept of trust. Earlier in the podcast, we talked about cognitive trust, which is trust you build over the long term. But then there's this concept of effective trust, which humans basically figure out in the first 2 to 3 seconds, 5 seconds, if they trust someone or something. It's, you know, very important for humans historically to be able to do that fight or flight in any kind of scenario. It also has huge downsides. Things like bias or based heavily off effective trust. So there was Japanese research in the 1970s that came up with this concept of the uncanny valley, that the more human something is without actually being human, the more freaked out about it we as humans are, and the less likely we are to trust it. This is why, for example, on the Meta announcement of these kind of bots that they're building, humanized bots, I'm not convinced that's going to work, because I think for a long time, we're going to know it's not really human quite quickly. And we're actually, our trust is going to go down, especially because we think if it's not disclosed, we're going to think we're being tricked. I think the interface is, we're trying to make things too human. My gut is we're going to go in the opposite direction. And instead of making things feel human, so for example, right, everyone talks about, oh, you'll call into customer service and you'll talk to a bot and you'll think it's a person. Is that really the best way to solve the problem? Wouldn't the best way to solve the problem of changing your address on Amex be to open the app and tell the app, change my address, and then have it show up in the app and then hit confirm? We think that's going to be the approach to this. We think the problem with this technology is we're still thinking about it in the old paradigm, right? We're saying, all right, how do we make call centers better? Instead of, do we need freaking call centers at all? And can we just work it into a whole new technology approach? That's where I think we're going to end up.
Well, I think it's a really fascinating topic, and you're right. I think we can easily talk about this in a year, and there are going to be some totally new advances, and you'll be right about a lot of the things, and then there'll be one or two, you know, not black swan events, but minor events that, you know, push the market in one direction or another. But either way, I think the book is a fantastic primer on all things voice tech and conversational AI. I think people will pick up a lot. So I definitely encourage them to pick it up. We'll put a link in the show notes. And Tobias, this was fantastic. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks, Jeremy. It was great. Loved it.
Thanks again to Tobias for making the time. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Got a burning question you want covered on a future episode? Go to futureproofshow.com to submit. Special thanks this week to producer Jason Stack. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.